Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So, Sin, did you learn to cook from your mom?
No, I didn't. But I certainly learned a lot about how the kitchen works and, you know, certainly about eating food seasonally and eating good food. But my mother was at home and did all the cooking. And, you know, my sister and I were responsible for setting the table and doing the dishes afterwards. But she did not look for too much assistance. So I really learned how to cook when I started working in restaurants professionally.
Well, I guess what, in a greedy way, I just want to know, are the recipes of your mom's that you liked or certain ones that
Absolutely.
You learned or maybe after the fact, when you were not under her feet driving her crazy as as a child, you know, things that you picked up or that you loved to make that your mom taught you?
I think there's some of those traditional times of the year that my mother was so good at making Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner, Easter dinner. All of those things were so special in our home, just like most people's. And she was brilliant at that. And mashed potatoes were always one of those things that we just couldn't wait for her to make. You know, it was usually on a special occasion. Mashed potatoes are a good bit of work. And stuffing. When she would stuff a chicken, we would just all jump up and down for joy because we're of German descent and absolutely love kind of all this traditional Pennsylvania Dutch cooking that my mother was, you know, learned from her mother who learned from her mother.
Does that mean your mother put sausages in the stuffing or sauerkraut in the stuffing? Or
No. It was very simple. Her stuffing actually was onion and celery sauteed in butter with salt and pepper. And then she would make her own croutons from fresh bread, let it dry out and mix the two together and put that in the chicken. So that was always something. And then mashed potatoes were, you know, potatoes boiled in a pot with water and salt and drained. And she would put them in a mixer and add hot milk and butter and salt and pepper. And I make them very differently as a chef, but those were very satisfying. And then one of the other things she would do was the next day she would make potato cakes from the cold mashed potatoes. And I think that was really something that my grandmother did, my great-grandmother did.
Something like that kind of potato cake with a fried egg on it the next morning.
Good. So good. And, you know, those were things that were passed from generation to generation. Stuffing a hog maw, which is the lining of the pig's stomach, using it basically as a casing. And
sounds so appetizing.
It is.
It does to me, but I'm guessing a lot of listeners are not going to be excited about the lining of the pig's stomach.
Well, you know, what do you think a casing is? It's basically the intestines.
Yeah.
So any sausage is packed into it.
Hog maw is a kind of sausage.
It's just kind of a gigantic sausage because it actually is about
casing.
The size of a football,
yeah.
Or bigger than that. Right.
That's the ideal sausage.
It is.
It's football sized.
Maybe
that should be that we have to do a tailgating show and you have to do a hog maw recipe.
Oof,
as the
so
ultimate
good.
Football shaped sausage.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have to do this for the autumn.
Okay. We'll do it.
Okay.
But, you know, I think other things that I learned from my mother was, you know, she utilized everything and you know, always cleaned out all of her. If she was making something with batter, she cleaned every bit of it out of the bowl. And that was one of the first things I was told when I worked in a restaurant kitchen. We don't waste anything, you know, as long as it's healthy and good, you don't waste it. So you're always taught to scrape everything out and use all the product available. So, you know, just learning good habits. My mother was extremely organized and having that built into you as a child, you know, whether it was keeping your room clean, you know, all the things that we were responsible for. We were taught how to clean the house. We were expected to help clean the house. All these things are great ways to I was taught how to iron. I mean, all those things are great ways to prepare yourself for the rest of your life. And I'm thankful that my mother taught me what she did.
It's a funny thing about the home economics, right? Economics is part of that, and mm-hmm. a lot of those things are good for your pocket if you're good at them.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Indeed. And make you efficient in all ways.
I know my great-grandmother was one of those people that it never, the trash can did not win.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it was that she bought, she was going to figure out how to use and use
Absolutely.
It well.
Sure.
A lot of times, those are the best things that she ever made. So,
What were some of the things that you learned from your grandmother or great-grandmother?
Well, my great-grandmother was a gifted cook and a Southern cook, and a lot of traditional things, whether they were pickled or fried or preserved, you know, those are her strengths, were either stews, Frogmore stew, or not made with squirrels, but usually with pork shoulder, you know, but or veal if she could get it on the cheap, you know, fried chicken, but sometimes she'd just buy legs and backs. And they would have great flavor and be a lot cheaper to produce.
For the fried chicken?
For the fried chicken.
Yeah.
And she'd use, and because the legs and the backs would produce much more fat, she'd save the fat to make the next batch of biscuits with.
Biscuits, for sure.
You know, so sounds she wouldn't good. Have to buy as much butter. She had that fat from the chicken to make the biscuits. And those are better.
I think they like
And she used them for her pie crust, too. I mean, that's
so good. So good.
You know, she always had the pickles that she was making, you know, like little quick pickles in the fridge. She had one particular cut glass dish that was just always filled with these.
That sounds nice.
And she'd pickle kind of everything. It was the cucumbers a lot, but you could count on cauliflower being in there or peppers being in there. Melon being in
sort
there
of a
sometimes.
Chow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, but always a little, you know, something. It was never mixed, but it was always something kind of there. So if she was serving something fried or something stewed, she had the little spicy, bright, you know, mm-hmm. tart
vinegar
something
based.
To go along with it.
Right.
And would usually make rice, or if corn was in season, it'd be corn.
Did she make good rice?
She made amazing rice.
That's
She made dirty rice sometimes. I didn't even know what it was called.
Wow, that's great.
Because she'd save the livers and the hearts from chickens when she got whole chickens.
So much flavor.
And season the pan with the onions and the, you know, and the organ meats all chopped up, and then cook the rice, you know, and then toast the rice in that, and then put
great.
The top on and
great traditional
and finish
Southern
the rice.
Dish.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the stuff she was great at. My great-grandmother was not so gifted. She was great at a lot of things, and she was a wonderful person, and she was the head of the, you know, like the symphony women's committee.
You mean
and
your
whatnot.
Grandmother?
My grandmother.
Yes.
But her daughter did not pick up her kitchen skills.
Your mother.
My grandmother, my mother was not particularly gifted in the kitchen either. That did not pass along. It skipped some generations. My grandmother famously, God bless her, made a recipe she had looked up in some magazine or something. This has got to be 1971, 72. For crunchy meatballs.
Oh, no.
And, yeah. Right? You hear that. You're like, that's a bad idea.
Oh, no, don't do that.
That sounds terrible. But she made these meatballs. And she was helping my mother out, and she made dinner, and she made these meatballs, and she figured my mother would just put San Giorgio spaghetti in the pot and cook the spaghetti and serve it with the meatballs, and, you know, three little boys would be good.
Right.
Right? So spaghetti is coming. My little brothers are excited. I'm like, that's good. Meatball smell a little weird, you know, but it's spaghetti. It's going to work out. It's going to be good. And it's like jarred tomato sauce, and meatballs go in it. And we sit down at the table. It's three little boys. We're all excited. You know, we're like 7 and 5 and 3 and, mm-hmm. you know, just a mountain of energy and mess. And we're sitting at the table and biting the first meatball. And it's like, oh.
Ew.
Oh, this is crunchy. Is there broken glass in this meatball or something?
No.
No. And so my mother, we were all confused. My mother calls my grandmother. What happened? I made crunchy meatballs. They said to put peanuts in them.
Oh, yikes.
There were peanuts in the meatballs. And we were little boys. We were not really ready for this sort of culinary adventure.
Weird.
You know,
weird.
We've been having fried chicken legs and collard greens and rice at my great-grandmother's, which was great.
Yes.
We're ready for that.
Yes.
The meatballs with the peanuts in them.
I was afraid you were going to say there were potato chips or something.
No,
in there. Yeah.
No.
Gosh.
No. It was traumatic enough that I can picture my brother Harrison taking one of the meatballs and putting it in our dog's dish.
Oh no.
And the dog that ate everything, the dog looked at it and left the room.
That's bad.
So that was
no
tough.
More crunchy
meatballs. My great grandmother was the cook. My grandmother was a wonderful, loving grandmother, but was not the cook.
She was a wonderful lady.
And she was no longer allowed to make.
I think she made a lot of tomato aspic, didn't she?
She did a lot of tomato aspic, yeah. Lots of things
sort of
in jelly.
Sort of associate that with her. Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why I began to do a lot of cooking on large scale when I was a kid was because she wanted to entertain. And I think I was so horrified by the fact that she might poison all of her friends who seemed really nice. I started doing a lot of cooking for parties at her house.
I know.
When I was a teenager.
Which is good.
When I wasn't, it was like stuff I learned at work and whatnot and all kinds of other stuff, just out of necessity for trying to keep her out of prison.
That's cool, though. It was a good way for you to get started in catering and, you know, sort of understanding how to feed a large group of people.
I think my first Mother's Day, you know, the project was my father had always made pancakes for my brothers and I. And he would make the batter in the shape of our initials. So I got a T pancake.
That's nice.
Harrison got an H pancake. And Clark got a C pancake. I decided I was going to put the griddle on one Mother's Day and make mom pancakes. So I made the mom pancakes, and I realized I had to get 3 plates.
That's awesome. So she kind of got a series of pancakes.
She got a series of pancakes. That's, spelled mom.
Well, that was cute.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
You kind of laid them all across the bed.
That's funny.
And so if, now I don't know if your mom's coming to visit or not, but like, you know, real quick, what, if you're making your mom lunch, you're making mom dinner this year for Mother's Day, what's on your mind? What would you make?
I'm going to think about the things that my mother likes, and she does love salad. She loves hearts of palm. So I was thinking, since I know a lot of people like to grill on Mother's Day, that I would make the grilled romaine salad for her, which is, if you get the heart of the romaine and you wash them well, just sort of plunge them into a sink full of water as a whole piece, and then dry them well, shake them out, dry them well, put them on some towels. That just sort of drizzled with a little bit of oil and salt and pepper. You want to make sure it's very little because you don't want it to flame up on the grill. Oil down your grill, let the oil and the smoke dissipate, put it on, grill it for about 30 seconds, just kind of keep rotating it until you feel like you've grilled the whole thing. And I would say you could probably feed 2 to 4 people from what, it depends on how many courses you're having, really, with that grilled romaine. And if it's going to be a big course for you, I would just cut them in half after it comes off the grill.
Well, grilling the romaine, you're only cooking it for a few moments, right?
Right. It's very quick. I mean, at the end, it'll probably be maybe 90 seconds, but it could even be 60 seconds.
And you keep moving it so it doesn't burn
right.
a lot on any leaves.
You don't want it
leaves.
To burn, but you do want it to get a little heat. I mean, you could even do it for 40 seconds.
It kind of wilts the outside activity. Leaves and gets a little mm-hmm. smoke.
Exactly. And then we cut the top and the bottom off and then just cut it in half lengthwise. And like I said, if it needs to be a big course, then that's a nice portion. And then drizzle it with a little bit, just a tiny bit of extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper. And then if you feel like it, I make a basil and Reggiano vinaigrette for that. And it's a pretty simple dressing to make and it might be worth your time to try to make it. So it would be a whole egg in the blender. So you're going to put all of these ingredients in the blender together, 20 leaves of basil, 20 pieces of chive, 1 whole egg, about a teaspoon of kosher salt, probably about 10 turns of a pepper mill, 5 to 10 turns, depends on how much pepper you like, and the juice of a lemon or 2, depending how juicy they are. You want a couple tablespoons of lemon juice and maybe a tablespoon of Dijon mustard, and just put it all in the blender, put it, you know, get it going, get it up onto high so that the basil and the chives actually puree, and then turn it down to a medium speed and start to drizzle in corn oil, and you make an emulsified dressing that way, which means that all the fats and the acids are suspended with the protein, which is the
and
egg
yolk. You spin that in the blender for a minute maybe?
Or less. You do not want that to get hot, so you want to do it as quickly as possible without bursting it all over mm-hmm. you. That's a great dressing.
And you just kind of spoon that on the grilled romaine?
Yeah, exactly. Spoon it on, or if you have a squirter bottle, pop in a squirter bottle and drizzle it on. But you can easily just spoon it on, and that's really great. And then just put slices of hearts of palm on there, and that is something that's you can buy fresh or you can buy it canned. And I will say there's absolutely nothing wrong with canned hearts of palm. You drain them. You never want to it, once you go to cut a hearts of palm, if you feel that the knife is really how do I want to say, almost like tugging on the hearts of palm, you know it's too tough to eat. So sometimes they are too tough in the can.
They should be tender.
Yeah. And so we just cut them into sort of long bias cut pieces and put those on. And when we do have summer tomatoes, you know, just a thought for the summer, you could add some fresh tomato to that, and it makes a great, great salad. So
it'd be nice to even take a fat slice of an heirloom and put that on the grill for a couple of seconds on each side.
Delicious.
Just to take the chill off of it so it goes along with the lettuce.
And you could add grated Reggiano to it. I don't think I actually added that to the dressing. You're supposed to puree a little bit of Reggiano into the dressing at the end. Or you could just, microplane or grate Reggiano on top. Or you could add buffalo mozzarella to it or a crumbled goat's cheese. You know, maybe you don't want the hearts of palm. There are a lot of different ways you could go with the grilled romaine. One of the other things is,
what else does your mom want?
She loves crab meat, so I would make, if I could get good crab meat, I would make her crab cakes. It's one of her absolute favorite things.
I know you're not going to tell the world your crab cake recipe.
I'm not, but I'm going to tell them how to make a crab, since everybody probably can come up with a crab cake recipe, although I would encourage you to never put any sort of peppers, bell peppers. I would beg you to not put any bell peppers in your crab cake because I think it blows out the whole flavor of the crab meat.
The crab meat's so delicate. You only want to... the height in that, and it's easy to dominate.
And you're talking about fresh lemon juice or, you know, something very simple should be in a crab cake, not a lot of spices. I was going to suggest making a crab flan. And the basic flan recipe is 1 quart of cream, 7 whole eggs, and 3 yolks. And it depends on what you're adding to the flan or custard. This is a savory dish. This is don't be confused. It would be obviously it's a savory dish.
This is not creme caramel.
No, this is a wonderful savory custard. And for the crab meat, I would probably drop it to 6 whole eggs and 2 yolks, and salt and pepper, crab meat. And if you have a little bit of sherry or want to buy sherry, I use manzanilla sherry in my she crab soup. So I typically put it in my flan
A really light dry sherry. It's not like something sweet.
No. Yes. Yeah, exactly. A light, dry sherry, manzanilla, and a little bit of, I think I said salt and pepper, and just a touch of nutmeg. And it's very simple. All you have to do is get out a bowl, put your cream in it, whisk your eggs into it, add your seasoning, and put whatever you're going to use, say a Pyrex dish or a little souffle cup are perfect. Or if you want to make a large one, you could use any sort of casserole dish. But you are going to do this in a water bath. So whatever you're using, you have to have a bigger pan big enough that you can put it into this dish into a water bath. Spray it, put the crab meat in the bottom, put the custard in, bake it for about an hour and 20 minutes at a low temperature, about 280 degrees. And you want it to be firm but not hard when it comes out. If you shake the pan and it's still wiggling in the center, you want that to become a little bit more solid. So that's when you know it's done. And if you weren't already doing the romaine salad, I might serve a little mosh salad or something pretty and delicate, or maybe even a arugula salad to awaken the flavors, something like that on the side. And that could be an entirely its own dish. And those are two things that I would certainly serve my mother.
So would your mother drink a glass of champagne with you with nice menu like that for lunch?
She would, absolutely. And I would want pink champagne. So what would you suggest?
Oh, rosé champagne. Depends a little upon style that you're after. I had a bottling recently, a new bottling that Pommery is making. The appanage bottling that's very dry, they're making a rosé appanage.
Great.
That I think is every bit as good as the Bicar Samo rosé, if not nicer.
That's great.
It's a little bit less fruity, and it's a little bit less sweet, and super charming for an application like this. And the bottle disappears incredibly quickly.
I bet. It certainly would at my house.
No question. Well, when we come back, we've got a few more recipes and lots of listener questions and emails to address on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine.